Welcome to the Faded Spade Podcast with your hosts, Tom Wheaton and Sean McCormick.
Thank you for joining us for another Faded Spade Podcast. I'm your host, Tom Wheaton, founder and CEO of Faded Spade. Join with the co-host, the poker boss, Sean McCormick. What's up, man? You ready for this great interview with Matt Berkey or what?
Can I be honest for a second?
Yeah.
I need some of this. It has been a long week, sir, and we are building up to the holiday weekend here. I am excited, but I'm also, this is one of the scariest weekends in Las Vegas. So it's so many people come here.
Really?
I guess that's great for business, though. I shouldn't like shoo them away, right?
Labor Day weekend. Well, we have the opposite problem in Florida. Everyone's kind of getting out of here because it is now Category 4 hurricane coming for Central Florida. So the tale of two tapes, I guess, man. We'll see what happens, though. Yes, hopefully, sir, we're here for a podcast after Matt Berkey, but we'll see.
If not, we'll be coming live from Las Vegas, and I'll be your only host.
Brutal. Well, let's talk about today's episode, Sean. It's really an unbelievable story that Matt Berkey has, both from a personal standpoint, but we're diving into his entrepreneurial story, and which really revolves around not just his poker career, but also Solve for Why poker training and Solve for Why Academy, Solve for Why TV. You can find information using any of those phrases, but what I consider one of the most innovative poker training platforms out there. Like, we're not being paid to say that. I just really believe that. I actually use it for my own training. And the story that he has leading up to it and then during it, I think one is one that people will find inspiring and educational at the same time. I learned a lot just from a business standpoint, listening to him and gave us a lot of things to think about, you know?
Yeah, obviously the proof is in the pudding, and you have bought into the Solve for Why, and you've had some early, you know, pretty quick results. And let's not do the Hendon comparison, because obviously I have not taken the course. And if you compare them right away, you're just like, okay, well, Sean needs to step up his game. So maybe I'll have to Solve for Why soon.
I think you should. And look, I've only been a tournament player for a couple of years, predominantly cash for the last 15, but the tournament strategies that Solve for Why provides have helped me immensely. But anyway, not to shill that too much, you know, about Matt, he has been in the industry for 15, 16 years. He's had longevity. I think he's made himself a authority in the industry. I think he is very passionate about moving the industry forward. And you can follow him at Berkey11 on Twitter. It's also at Solve for Why Poker Training on Twitter. And you can get into discussions with him and his peers a lot of times about where the industry is going and what we should be doing as an industry. So I would definitely recommend check that out. Matt has over $4 million in tournament earnings, right? And if you ask him, he considers himself a cash game player. So stick around for a really cool segment about poker entertainment where Sean, Matt, and I play a little game where if we could wave a magic wand, what would poker entertainment look like for us in the future? And, you know, that has been a hot topic probably for the last year, but it's really cool to hear your opinions and Matt's, and I'll give mine. And who knows, you know, all that type of idea generation could lead to some type of execution here in the future.
For sure. Yeah. You got a lot of guys in the industry that are definitely smarter than we are. And I believe Matt to be one of those guys. He's just, he understands the pulse of the industry and what it might take to get it to the next level. And someone might hear this and it's a jump off point for them, which would be really awesome. And I know Matt, myself, and you would love to be a part of that and do whatever our respective roles to help poker get to that next level. So I'm really excited, not only for our interview with him, but to see where we go after this. He's definitely one of a kind.
And you know what? He walks the walk as well. He doesn't just talk the talk. You look at some things that Solve for Why does, like Poker Out Loud, right? It's this really awesome RFID table training experience where you can watch them play cash games, and they give their thoughts about what they're about to do in the hand without other people hearing it. That's like part entertainment, but also part training. I think one of the most innovating, you know, really training content programs out there. So definitely give that a check out. But here's the deal, guys. As you know, as part of this podcast, we do run a 15% promotional discount on FadedSpade.com. So if you're looking for playing cards for your home games, go ahead and check it out. And then you can find the new Faded Spade podcast on YouTube, brand new YouTube channel if you're interested in video. But then audio, you can find it on Google, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, you name it, we're out there. And away we go, Sean. So without further ado, the entrepreneurial story of Matt Berkey, followed by a great segment about poker entertainment.
Yes, sir.
Founder Hour.
All right, Faded Spade podcast listeners and viewers, as you just heard, we are here with the Founder Hour segment of the Faded Spade podcast with Mr. Matt Berkey. What's up, Matt? How you doing, man?
Can't complain. Got a little sunburn, so, you know, summer's in full effect.
Oh, 100%. Now, where's the sunburn, though?
It's not too bad, but it wasn't from Florida, that's for sure. I went hiking the other day and got torched.
Oh, nice, man. Sean, when was the last time you went hiking? When was the last time you had a sunburn?
Sunburns a little few and far between for me, but thanks, Tom. Yeah, I go hiking. Actually, the wife and I were just talking about going this weekend. We're obviously in the Vegas heat right now. We'll have to get up really early. You can't be out there past like 11 a.m. or you just get torched.
What the hell are you doing hiking in like 105 degrees?
No, it wasn't that bad. I went on Saturday. My nephew was in town with a couple of his college friends, and we went to Red Rock. And I think it was like 100, maybe.
Oh, wow.
It wasn't bad. And we went early. We went at like 10 o'clock. But, you know, I didn't do the precautionary measures of sunscreen and whatnot. Felt like it was about time to get a tan.
Yeah, there you go. Well, I know all about sunscreen
with
the dome.
Yeah.
So, look, we're going to start this off with a joke. A guy from Boston, a guy from Jersey, and a guy from Pittsburgh walk into a bar. We're not going to do that. That's going to get edited out. So, all right. So let's jump into this, Matt. So you guys know, I mean, I think you know the purpose of the Faded Spade podcast and this Founder Hour segment. It's to jump in, to kind of jump into the untold entrepreneurial story of notable people in the industry. And, you know, when you hear your lead in, you know, you'll hear what we think about you in that regard. We think you have become an authority in the industry and absolutely great for the industry and its future as a player and as a business person. So we're going to jump in and just start talking about your entrepreneurial journey. I think a lot of people know about your Solve for Why poker training business and where that started, how it evolved, but let's really dive into it, man. So you ready?
Sure.
Yeah. Let's do it. Yeah. So Matt, just for our listeners and viewers, man, like give people a heads up on your past. Where are you from? How did you get from kind of where you were from to where you are now as a poker player and as a business person?
So I grew up in a small town just north of Pittsburgh called Leechburg, Pennsylvania. It's a steel mill town. Literally, it's 1 square mile with 1 traffic light, and the steel mill was walking distance from the high school. It was actually like a pretty reasonable suburb probably in the 80s and early 90s just because it was close proximity to Pittsburgh. It had a lot of there was a steel mill in our town. There was a steel mill in the neighboring town. So there was a lot of job placement opportunity for, I guess, the generations past. But by the time I graduated high school, they had all shut down. Allegheny Ludlam Steel had effectively gone under. And, you know, a lot of poverty struck that area. And I was kind of a part of that movement growing up. I grew up rather impoverished. My mom was struggling with addiction, never had a job. You know, I was a welfare child, all that good stuff that goes along with struggling a little bit financially growing up. So, you know, I guess I have a background in what the darkest areas of life can look like. And it's kind of, I guess, like driven me in a lot of ways. I went to college in Erie, PA, played baseball, was in hot pursuit of a non-existent professional career for a long time, sold myself that dream. And poker just kind of like came naturally to me. It filled the void. Once I realized I wasn't going to make it, it was my next logical leap. It allowed me to like remain competitive. And, you know, at that point, by the time I was 24, 25 and kind of accepting that I wasn't going to play baseball for a living, I was making more money than I had ever seen physically in my life. Like the first time I won 5K in a night, it was like, wow, this is more money than my mom has probably ever had.
I hear you, man. And I was wondering if you're going to bring up the story about your mom. You've been very open about that whole part of your life and et cetera. And I think that's great that you had that openness about it, and especially your recent speaking engagement, right? Yep. I think sounds like you really positively impact a lot of people in the room that were brought up in similar situations. So when you think about all that in your life that transpired from, you know, when you were born to when you became older, and you think about now how you're running a business and you're a poker player, what during that time do you think kind of sets you up to kind of live this entrepreneurial lifestyle, right? Or even like, what was the first thing you remember growing up in terms of something you might have done that was entrepreneurial?
So growing up was a little bit different because everything was about a means to an end.
Yeah.
And you just kind of like very young, I guess you kind of accept what you can and what you can't control. So, you know, when you want things, you kind of accept that like you don't get to have the nicest things, but you can work in a certain path towards lesser versions of them. You know, so it's like I would want video games or things like that growing up, and I would just kind of like learn how to be a young kid making money. And I guess the real thing that sticks out in my mind is like just the idea of value proposition. So I can recall on a snow day whenever I was like 13, my friend and I just got two shovels and we walked around the entire neighborhood just knocking on doors, asking people if they wanted their car shoveled out or whatever the case may be. And, you know, most of them turned us away. It was just a pest. They didn't need it or whatever. But the snow was pretty bad. And like, we probably, you know, in this instance, probably had like 8 to 10 inches. And there were a lot of people who were just generally snowed in. So, you know, we made a few bucks. Some people wanted their car shoveled out so they could get to work, whatever. And we did okay. And then we happened upon this older woman's house. And she just couldn't have been any meaner. She was basically shooing us away, telling us to like get the hell off her porch. And we were like, listen, it's okay. Like, we'll just do it. Like, you know, you don't have to pay us or anything like that. And she was like, you know, threatening to call the police or whatever. So we were like, okay, listen, like, don't worry about it. We're not going to bother you any longer. And we just shoveled her entire walkway. Wow. And the idea wasn't to do it so that she would see we were, you know, ambitious and pat us on the back and give us a reward for it. It was more so just like, okay, well, we have something of value to offer and she desperately needs it regardless of like how bad she's pushing back. So like, let's just do this. And, you know, good things may or may not come of it. It doesn't really matter. It doesn't have to be about the end goal reward. And it actually resulted in a positive, obviously it wouldn't be much of a story if it wasn't a positive takeaway, but like she was still pissed at us after the sidewalk was shoveled. And her neighbor had seen it and asked us to shovel his walkway and paid us like an absorbent amount of money, like $50 or something ridiculous.
Wow.
So whether it's by proxy of just like the world working in certain ways or getting positive feedback from this instance, it just kind of like stuck in my craw of like, you know, if you offer something of value to people, then somebody will recognize that you're fulfilling a need and give you your just dues.
Oh, I love that, man. Guys, bringing back memories of me shoveling driveways in Jersey. And I didn't have any mean people run into it. It was more like, you know, here's a quarter. Oh, great. Yeah. But
yeah,
it's funny how that works out. And it's funny how those types of situations kind of mold you as you're growing up and as you start figuring out what you want to do with your life, right? So you and I have baseball in common, right? And I know you went pretty darn deep in baseball. And then I know you transitioned to poker and that took its place, right? So talk to the listeners and viewers about how, like, when baseball was over, poker was beginning, and it still sounds like you felt the need to do more or like than just be a player. Was that an intentional decision, or did like the business decision just kind of happen through opportunity?
No, I mean, I think there's a big gap there where I was just a poker player. Like okay. there was a long void where, you know, I had other interests, but when you're in your 20s, you're just trying to figure life out. So yeah. It was a lot of failure. It was a lot of rinse and repeat, trial and error type stuff. And, you know, I look back, like I used to write a lot, probably more so then than I do now. And I like go back and I reread all those articles and blogs and things like that I wrote. And you could just see it was just this constant roller coaster of trying to figure out how business works, how the variance in this game works. You know, especially back then, there weren't any metrics. There weren't any anybody. There wasn't anybody holding your hand or any path that was already carved for you. So, in a lot of ways, my generation like kind of took it on the chin, where we were in a soft market, and that made it really easy to survive. But it was very difficult to thrive because we just didn't know anything about anything. And unless you had a finance background or a business background, you probably made a lot of big errors like I did, where you torched off bankroll after bankroll after bankroll, chasing the big shots, trying to run 20K into a million as fast as you possibly could.
So before Solve for Why came about, were there any types of other like businesses you tried to start during that time frame you're talking about, from kind of post-baseball and turning into a professional player?
No, this is definitely my first time. I backed, which I wasn't good at. I just threw money at problems, and just like hoped for the best. Yeah. Like, you know, I have this like, probably to a fault, I just like believe in people. I'm extremely trusting until somebody gives me reason not to be. And you know, the people I surround myself with, I have the highest amount of faith in them to be able to do good. So if it's just a matter of financing it, I've always been quick to just like kind of throw money at it and see what could happen. But you know, I don't really regret it because it taught me a lot as far as like how much poker in and of itself is a business, like how many metrics you actually do need to understand. Like, people don't get it, but it's really critical to even be able to understand like what the potential market cap of a particular stake is, right? So if you're playing 2-5, you know, how much money is there in the 2-5 ecosystem locally, globally, whatever, and how much of that pie can you actually carve out through any sort of like volume, through playing the best games, through suffering variance, like how much of a bankroll do you need? You have to go through all of these practical business measures that are necessary in order to actually operate in a profit. But when money's coming so freely, like it was in the early 2000s, you just kind of show up.
Yeah.
You just show up, you collect a check, and you just keep living the good life.
You know, we just had Jamie on the podcast, and she said something very similar to that, especially in the early 2000s, right, John? And, you know, you took my next question right out of my mouth because it was about how poker relates to business. And I got to tell you, I have a business degree, but when you speak business, it even like, though I have a business degree, you've got more knowledge about some facets of business than I even have. And that's, I think, from the real life of experience of how you correlate poker to a business. And I don't think a lot of people know how to do that. And you do.
I don't know, man. I mean, I've gotten really positive feedback as far as like what I know about business, but it's all self-taught. So like, I don't have any trust that I'm right. Yeah. It's just like a lot of observation, research, and talking to people much, much smarter than me when it comes to these types of things.
So if they're in the same spot where like they may not have a business background, but they have some kind of vision for something they want to start or somewhere they want to go in their life, but they don't know how to get there and they don't have a background in it, like what advice would you give them?
I mean, honestly, watch Shark Tank, first of all. I honestly think like it seems ridiculous because it's pure entertainment, but it's honestly like a really great teaching tool. Like, you start to understand the vernacular, you start to understand the starting points at which you need to begin your research, and it's all like pretty sound, you know. Like, you need to know your numbers, you need to know how to accumulate those numbers and things along those lines. But really, the biggest piece of advice that I could give, and the reason why I said watch Shark Tank, is because what should become abundantly clear after watching dozens of people go in there and pitch their idea is that your idea doesn't mean shit. There couldn't be anything more worthless than an idea. There are a dime a dozen. All that matters is the ability to execute. And that is really, really, really hard. The amount of people who like come to me with what they feel is a game-changing billion-dollar idea that I just have to like look at and be like, hey, that's novel. But like, how are you going to do it? Like, the amount of people who are just like, you know what we need to do? We need to attack the Chinese and Indian market in poker and just like flourish off of it. Or we need to attack the female demographic in poker. Like, it's untapped market. We'll just make billions. It's like, you think that this isn't obvious to everybody else? Like, how do you see the path to bridge these two?
I've always said, and I'm a big Gary Vaynerchuk fan, and he talks about that a lot, about execution. And you just got to act. You got to do something. And I think you're right. Like, God, Faded Spade was an idea for 6 years before I got off my ass and did something about it. Right.
Yeah.
I mean, all the great things that Sean has, you know, instituted at Ari and the places he's worked, they've all just been ideas until he and his team got off their butts and did something about it. Right. So I think that's an important takeaway for listeners and viewers. Like, you can have all these ideas in your head, but until you start taking steps to achieve it, no matter how small the step is, like nothing's going to get done. So it's just,
yeah, right? I think there are probably more marginal ideas that if I just heard them pitched to me, I would shrug and just be like, that's not worth pursuing, yeah, that actually get executed and morph into something good. Yeah. Then there are great ideas that ultimately flesh out to be great.
Yeah. I love it, man. I think you're 100% right. And I think if you're listening and watching, like, take that to heart. This is from somebody who has achieved success in poker and business and is going to continue to, and we'll hear about that vision more too. So, all right. Solve for why poker training, man. So it sounds like this was your first foray into starting an actual business, right? And,
yep.
And so talk to me about that whole process. I know it was I know training and education and et cetera is a huge passion of yours, but you have the idea like you're talking about. What the heck was your first step into actually starting it? Like the people, the processes, all that stuff.
So it was kind of a little bit of a perfect storm. It was like mid to late 2015. So I guess it was like summer 2015. My grandma was terminal. So I was back home, like caregiving for her. And I was on the biggest downswing of my life. I was at the tail end of like $5 million downswing. And you know, it was getting dicey. It's like the game was huge. So it was well within, standard deviation or two of what an expected downswing was. You know, at any given time we were playing somewhere between 3-6-12, 1K, 2K, sometimes even 2K, 4K. So it's like 5 million is a lot of money, but we might be talking about like 15 to 25 buy-ins. That happens all the time. If you find me somebody who hasn't gone on a 25K downswing at 5-10, I'll shake your hand.
Right.
You know, it's like, it's just a byproduct of the game. So it was this weird juxtapositioning between trying to, stomach the amount of money that was, and then also just acknowledge that it's well within random variance. And you know, also the timeline of it all was tough because, like I said, my grandma was terminal. I was very, very close with her. So I was back caregiving with her, for her. And, you know, the downswing, because I didn't get to play that often, was like over the course of a year. Mm-hmm. So it might've only been like 27 to 30 sessions or so, but it was like over a 12-month stretch. So it's these long periods of like having to sit and stew over these losses and figuring stuff out. And, you know, I probably wasn't doing the best job of utilizing my downtime. I was probably doing a lot more numbing of just like trying to distract myself through other areas of balance in life, be it working out or friends or whatever, and putting less time into actually dealing with how much of this is variance, how much of this is my poor play. Mm-hmm. I was at the time mentoring Christian Soto, who was a really close friend and ultimately became my business partner. And, you know, as things were coming to a head with my grandma, he was just like, we were working every day on getting better. And he was just like, listen, like the most game-changing thing that you did for me was I had him basically come over for a week and I just invited a bunch of friends and we played on an RFID table for 7 days straight. And then we analyzed the sessions thereafter. He's like, that was like game-changing for me. We should do that. And I was like, ah, man, like, I don't know. And the thing was, at that point, I had been coaching for a while privately, and I had a Google Drive of like 5 years worth of really well thought out, formulated like strategies and plans of attack. And I was like, you know, GTO was like really, really, really new at that point. And I was like, I really don't like the idea of leaking strategy. Like, we're doing things differently than everybody else. And I feel like putting that out there is just really harmful. And he just kind of like pushed and pushed. And finally, she had passed like, I believe it was like October. Mm-hmm. And I was ready to come back. So I ended up coming back and I go on the biggest upswing of my life. So I ended up going on like a $5.5 million upswing. And in the midst of that, he was still in my ear saying like, listen, it works. Like, you can see it in your own results now. You're working harder and it's translating. So I was like, all right, like by the time January of 2016 rolled around, I was like, let's do it. And at that point, I was kind of given the opportunity to play in the Super High Roller Bowl.
Yeah.
So I was like, all right, let's just do all this collectively together. We'll launch Solve for Why as a live training academy, and we're going to put me through the actual process of how to train for this event as if I'm putting myself through the academy. And that's going to be our proof of concept. And ultimately, Dead Money was born out of that. We ended up making a documentary, and it kind of just like snowballed from there.
And if you haven't seen Dead Money, absolutely check it out on Poker Go, right, Matt? Is the only place people can watch it on Poker Go? Yeah. It basically goes into detail of the story Matt's telling right now, which sounds like was your first real business project, the launching point for what Solve for Why ultimately is today, right?
Yeah. And I mean, honestly, like I have Jason Somerville to thank a little bit for this, because when I was broke in 2012, he asked me to be a part of the coaching team for Russell Thomas's final table of main event. And I thought it was just like really innovative. And it was like one of the first experiences I saw where people were actually taking advantage of the November 9, that delay of 3 months between the final nine and the final table. I was like, man, you know, like if I was ever given the opportunity for like a Black Swan event, like making the final table, or basically like something where you could prepare months ahead of time for one singular poker event, I was like, I have this vision of like what I would want to do. And it's not just about training yourself to be the best that you could be, running enough sims, being knowledgeable on your opposition, whatever. Like that's the poker business part of it. But the bigger branding opportunity is just kind of like leaning into all the exposure that you're about to get, this once in a lifetime opportunity from your industry standpoint, and figuring out the best way to channel that and grow so that this isn't a 15 minutes of fame kind of thing, but instead it becomes a jumping off point.
And you took advantage of it, man. And you did a great job. I mean, I can relate. Like that's what it was like for me in terms of when the cards reached WPT and then Poker Go. It was like, we've got this shot. And I remember, I'll tell a quick story about how we've met. When you were playing on Poker Go, you actually messaged our company about RFID cards, right?
Oh, yeah.
And then you and I met like a month later.
Yeah.
But anyway, that's a funny story. And I think that point is a really good point for people. Like, when you know, like you've got something that's about to happen in your business and you think it could be a big jumping launch point, like you've just got to put everything you have behind it, right? So talk to me about that. So you knew this was happening. You knew it could be a jumping point for Solve for Why. What was it like with you and Christian and the crew that you work with in Solve for Why during that process of saying, we've got to capitalize on this? Like, how'd you handle that?
Not as well as I could have, I don't think. It ultimately came together, but I just have this natural resistance to getting things moving. Yeah. Like I'm a born and bred procrastinator, and it's not because I want to procrastinate. It's the resistance to, I don't know, like just, it's just starting. Right. And honestly, like that's a big framework of like where we've started to shift our focus and Solve for Why is just helping people get their foot in the door a little bit better and streamlining that process to make it easy. Because even for this instance where it was like, okay, I'm going to do this to myself. I'm going to run myself through the ringer. I have no resistance to the training part. That's great. Like when it came to baseball, showing up was the hardest thing. Getting out of bed and actually making it to practice was never as difficult as actually suffering through the 2 hours of grueling, intensive running, lifting, training, whatever, right? That was enjoyable to me. It was just I guess like getting over the mental hurdle of like my time could be better spent. Right. And in this instance, I just didn't have a bigger opportunity. So my time could never be better spent, but I did have distractions. I was still playing the big game. Mm-hmm. I was still, you know, trying to fundamentally get this business off the ground and figure out what the hell business even is, how to structure it and all these other things, getting a website built. So it was really easy to stare at the next shiny object and forget that I needed to be studying for this $300,000 event.
Oh, I bet. Yeah. And that balance is such an important part. So when you're trying to figure out your balance between running your business and playing your poker at extremely high stakes, where if you're not prepared, I mean, your income is going to take a hit, right? Like you've got to be prepared for that. You've got to be prepared for your business. What would you say to listeners and viewers who are struggling with balance, right? Where like they've got to do one thing in one aspect of their life for money and to live and et cetera, but then they've also got this dream to build their own business and they're trying to do both. Like, what would you say to those people in terms of balance?
I mean, for me, I kind of feel like I've hacked this over the last handful of years just because like out of necessity basically. Yeah. But what I've come to find to be really helpful is to understand that we're driven to do things that appease us, right? Mm-hmm. And it doesn't necessarily have to be in the form of like happiness or pleasure, but at least in the form of interest. So it's really difficult sometimes to turn off that distracted inner voice that says like, oh, you're doing this right now, but you also have this priority that you have to take care of, and this one, and this one, and this one, and this one, right? So compartmentalizing is a challenge for a lot of people. And I think the best way to get around it is to create time intervals throughout the course of the day, especially if you're talking about routine, right? So like when I'm talking about like gym, food, emails, things that I'm always going to be doing every single day, I basically create an interval of time throughout the course of the day that is allocated to those specific priorities. And if I don't address them in that window, then they go neglected for the day and I don't think about it otherwise. So if I don't make it to the gym between 7 a.m. and noon, I'm just not going to the gym that day. And that sucks. I'm not going to be happy about it. And maybe I can work really hard to free up some time for myself later in the day. But from this point forward, I'm just not going to think about that because it's kind of an opportunity lost. And I have other priorities I need to organize. Basically, like, I think we think in this hierarchical point of view where like something takes precedent over the next thing, which takes precedent over the next thing. And if we're not addressing it from a top-down perspective, then we're failing. And the reality is we just don't function that way. Everything has its own little niche priority in our life and is going to attribute to our happiness or contentment or, you know, whatever, anything in between. And if we leave any one thing neglected because it's lower on the totem pole, we're just going to find this empty pit and ultimately succumb to distraction. So like, I like to give everything equal priority, but just allocate its own little time to it.
I'll be calling you up after this for tips on that. All right. So I'm going to ask you straight up, like, what's your why behind Solve for Why? Like, what's driving you to continue to evolve this thing? Like, what's that why behind Solve for Why?
Sure. I mean, for me, it's just like, it's total optimization in a lot of ways. And I don't mean that in a very robotic sense, where I think like people talk, like they think in terms of optimizing and they want to just like strip us down to like, you know, this robotic A, B, C, and D type thing. I think the exact opposite. I think like optimization provides freedom and it allows us like the extra bandwidth to do creative things. So basically the way I see it is AI is going to continually make human, manual labor rendered useless as we move forward. And, you know, on most simple tasks, that's going to be true. But where we're going to be most valued is in our problem solving ability, the arts, the sciences, things like that, our ability to discover and, reason. So the long and short of it is the whole why behind this is figuring out a way that we can better utilize the human populace and the bandwidth of, you know, the very complex human brain and teach it to optimize problem solving better. I think that results in further advances in science and technology. I think it results in more creative types that are contrarian to a lot of the common societal norms. I think it just basically results in a lot of expansion. And ultimately, the biggest goal would be to start solving worldwide problems by finding root causes. And I think that's what's largely going overlooked right now. If we look at like education or poverty or any of the other litany of issues that plague us worldwide, a lot of them are being examined from a how can we fix this now standpoint rather than why do these problems exist?
Yeah. And you know what? I'm glad you brought that up now because that was going to be one of my last questions in terms of your vision for Solve for Why in the future. But let's talk about that now, right? So right now, Solve for Why is what it is, right? It's a poker training academy, et cetera. But I know your vision for it is so much bigger and different than what it is now.
Yeah. Right?
So yeah. What's your real vision for this thing? Where do you see it going? And how do you think you can get there?
So it's definitely complex. I think that like in a lot of ways, I'm kind of mimicking models that already exist. People like Tim Ferriss who are into like biohacking and optimization in that regard. Joe Rogan, I think, is a good mouthpiece for this whole sector. I think in a lot of ways, I like that template, but I want it to be more expansive and more applicable to everybody. So ultimately, the progression would be to move laterally into other arenas, say fitness, nutrition, other areas where it's easy to find experts, but it's difficult to kind of make your way through all of the information and actually optimize yourself. So providing a simple path from A to Z for somebody who wants to get in better shape, who wants to be healthier, who wants to learn about other things in the world. Ultimately, I'd like to be a platform for that. And then the following step from there is I kind of want to like hack education. And ultimately, like what I think would fulfill a giant need would be is if we could introduce fundamental learning to youth. And that's challenging in this country because, you know, education is, it's largely public. So it's funded by federal dollars, which means that you have to kind of attack it from a government level. But there are ways to kind of circumvent this through like charter schools, or the idea that I have is like building massive community centers where we coordinate all after school programs. And this happens a lot easier at small scale than it would big scale. But most of these after school profit or programs are nonprofit or at least not for profit. So the idea of getting them all under one umbrella wouldn't be all that challenging to coordinate, I don't think. And then ultimately what you do is through proper funding, you now have kids in the community who want to play baseball, want to play football, want to take up art or dance or music or whatever. And you have them exchange after school hours of fundamental learning for these programs for free. And, you know, it's not mandatory. If you don't want your child learning about logic or logical fallacies, then you just pay the normal administrative fee that you would otherwise pay anyway. But I think that this solves a couple problems. It gets kids more active because they have skin in the game, which gives them more reason and resolve to like see things through. But also it alleviates the parents in a giant way where they're not now financially burdened. It would be a lot easier to coordinate travel where that wouldn't fall on the parents as well. Like you would hope that you'd be able to like kind of fund a lot of this stuff through the community itself.
That's an amazing vision, Matt. And you know what? Like, let us know what help you need to get there, man. I mean, it's just got such a purpose, right? And it's so much bigger than what the company is now. And, you know, what is it? What do you think you need? Like maybe just a pilot location or pilot person or et cetera to like try that concept in each of those buckets, like nutrition, education, et cetera.
Yeah. Yeah. I think for the next step, it'll be that. I need to understand the markets better, and I need to find experts who are willing to, I guess, partner in some capacity.
Yeah.
More so, I need to be able to prove the path of, I guess, return for anybody that I do ask to partner. So, like, poker is a perfect breeding ground for this. People crave the training. It's an inexact science. So, you know, there's always more questions than answers. And finding ways to optimize that and streamline is basically the task that we're undertaking. If we can kind of prove this to be worth something and demonstrate that it's profitable, it'll be a lot easier of a sell. Obviously, this would be like the unicorn, but to somebody like Rhonda Patrick, who is doing like a ton of scientific research on anti-carcinogenics and heat stress therapy and physical stress therapy and all this other stuff, right? So finding ways to partner with other industry leaders becomes a lot easier when you can just show them the money.
There you go. Unbelievable vision. All right. So let's back up a little bit now from that vision. So you got into business with friends, man.
Yeah.
You got into business with friends, with buddies. What the hell has that been like?
It's rewarding and also probably one of the worst ideas I've ever had. I mean, honestly, that's not true. It's just you have to go into it understanding that you can't fire friends. Like that's just the long and short of it, you know? Like and I'm not even talking from a business sense. It's like from your life, you can't divorce yourself from friends unless you're no longer friends. And like, that's not what anybody wants the outcome to be. So, the biggest challenge I think is that when you're dealing with people who are close to you, you see the best in them. So you have really high expectations. And more importantly, like you hope that they see the best in you and trust you. So my personal approach is always to like lead by example. So like I'll do more than I say. And then I'll get frustrated or upset when that's either not being acknowledged or not being mimicked. But that's just, you know, that's not really the proper approach. You still have to treat it like a business. You still have to spend a lot of time outlining things and getting details on paper as to what your expectations are, because just kind of leaving them up to do their own research the way that you have as a founder is unfair. They're not working for the same compensation. They don't have the same vision as you. And in a lot of ways, like, you're not going to have the same skills that they have, and vice versa. They're going to lack in areas that you're much more competent.
I think that's a very good point. And I'm sure a lot of people out there are getting into business with their friends, and I've done it in the past too. It takes patience and control what you can control and giving people the benefit of the doubt, right?
Yeah. The hardest thing I think is that everybody goes through ebbs and flows of how mentally invested they are. And it's really difficult to find synergy there where like everybody is just on it at the same time. So it's really easy to kind of like be on it yourself and be really critical of the person who's checked out. But like, and it takes time. It takes a lot of time and effort and a lot of failure and realization. But, you know, creating a more team dynamic where when somebody is kind of like dragging their feet, you have some sort of protocol in place to like uplift their spirits rather than like just shout at them and shut them down even further. You know, that's just stuff you have to learn the hard way, I think.
Yeah. And you know, you talk about failure, right? So looking at where you're at now, and where you were when you started SolveForWhy. So do you recall any like moments where you guys just failed or didn't do something you wanted to do and you had to like recover and move past it? Like, what was it and how'd you get past it?
I mean, there's always a bunch of small failures. We had to cancel an academy last April, I think, because I booked the academy the same week as the Party Poker Millions in Montreal, which I didn't realize. So it was just an oversight by me. I happened to catch it early enough where we only had a few people that we had to refund. You know, when we launched the beta of the site, there were a lot of bugs and things along those lines. But, you know, my policy has just always been like, do right by your customers. So we're always very quick to refund people if they're unhappy with their service. Actually, I do remember the biggest failure now. That just triggered, because we've given in 3.5 years or going on 4 years, I think we've run 26 academies. So we've probably had something in the neighborhood of like, maybe it's a little less, maybe like 21 academies, but something in the neighborhood of like 250, 300 people come through. We've given one full refund. And it was a really unfortunate series of events. We ran back-to-back academies for the first time ever in 2017. And everything worked fine through the first one. And then halfway through day one of the second one, the soldering on one of the wires for the motherboard of the RFID reader came undone, and we had no idea. So we think it's a software issue, and we spent like 40 minutes just doing everything we possibly could to try to figure it out. We ended the day early, apologized to everybody, promised them to make up the time later, and we tore the table apart that night, realized the wire came undone, resoldered it on. Everything was fine. We got through day two just fine. And then on day three, it broke again, like 30 minutes into play. So, you know, just being quick on my feet, I went and I dealt, and I like played along with them and looked at everybody's cards and like tried to give in-game feedback as I could. And then we gave them our primer course and our advanced principles course for free. So I got like 2,500 value in courses, as well as the ability to reattend any academy for free in the future. And for one person, that just wasn't good enough.
Oh, wow.
So we gave him a full refund, which, you know, by all accounts, like, I think it's like totally reasonable.
Well, number one, shit's going to happen, right? And it sounds like you adapted, and it sounds like you went over and beyond for the people who were your customers, and you still did the right thing. Like, even though you went over and beyond, somebody still wasn't happy and they still got a refund. Like, that doesn't happen a lot. So, and I think it's really interesting that you chose a failure in terms of, you know, the academy, but then a failure in your eyes was failing your customer. Right.
Yeah. I mean, you know,
speaks of volumes, right? So,
yeah. I mean, you know, ultimately we're really selling a VIP experience here. Yeah. So, it's like, I believe in the material. And for me personally, the academy experience is all about like the content that we actually give away, through the lectures, through the slideshows, whatever. But from the customer's perspective, it's all about the RFID gameplay. Mm-hmm. Right? Because that's their training tool moving forward. That's the one thing that they can always look back on, where they can, you know, kind of cringe at certain things or pat themselves on the back with others. And this is something that Christian and I we kind of lose sight of this a little bit, having done so many. And there have been times where we've like had to check each other, because doing commentary for 9 hours over the course of 3 days, over and over and over again, it can get daunting. And like, people are very unforgiving of the commentary, but like, you forget that everybody's watching this through eyes of like wanting to make their coach proud, wanting to make themselves or their loved ones proud, or whatever the case may be, right? Like, the first run through of watching commentary, almost unequivocally, everybody is going to look for their exact spots and hope to hear some sort of positive feedback. So we have to kind of be mindful and remember that, like, when we're criticizing, because that's our job, right? We're coaching them. We're trying to point out mistakes. We have to do it in a way that is receptive, right? Like, sometimes it's easy to like see a ridiculous play and kind of like crack a joke or not make fun at the person in particular, but sometimes like make fun of just the absurdity of poker as a whole, where it's like, oh, this mistake happened simply because somebody else was doing something crazy and the deck set it up this way and yada, 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 yada. And that can be funny to us as observers, but it's not going to be funny to the person who made the mistake. And that's a really, really tight rope for us to walk.
Got it. And just quickly, so if folks wanted to check out these academies, right? And then if folks wanted to check out the content of the academies and some of the analysis you do, where would you send them?
So you can actually watch all of the gameplay on Solve for Y TV. So it's tv.solveforyacademy.com. And we give a free 7-day trial where you can just like go view all the content for free. If you actually want to come to the academy, that website is just solveforyacademy.com.
Got it. And hey, I can vouch, guys. I subscribe. I actually use Solve for Y content for a lot of my tournament gameplay. It's helped increase my knowledge. I didn't realize how bad I really was until I started getting into the training hardcore, but definitely take some time to check it out. It's, in our opinion, the most innovative poker training program out there. And not just saying that because Matt is a Faded Spade card customer, saying that because it's the truth. So, all right. So Matt, so you've built this company to where it is now, right? With your friends, and obviously Christian is a huge part of it. You've got deeper into the content game. You're making yourself known in the industry as, like I said, like an authority on a variety of topics. Where do you go from here now with Solve for Y? Just in the next year or two, not necessarily the deeper vision, but
right,
just the next year or two in terms of like where you take the poker side of the training program now.
Yeah. So now it's all about proving scale, because I think this is the real crux for being able to pitch this to other markets. If we can demonstrate scalability, particularly through the online model, then I think we have a really easy sell in a lot of other industries. And through some trial and error and just like kind of better understanding the market as in and of itself, like how it is built from top to bottom, I guess, our main focus is increasing our value proposition. So effectively, there are a lot of sites, coaches, everything in between at that low watermark of $10 to $50 a month or $100 an hour if you're talking about private coaching. And, you know, my best estimate is that the market cap in the coaching industry is somewhere around 10 million and probably about, I don't know, 30% of that is being spent on these lesser by content wise, but lesser by price wise products. Our idea is that we just want to weed out all the bullshit for our customer. So, you know, if you have 150 different coaches, products, sites, et cetera, all to choose from, they're going to be a financial burden of you between $100 and $500 a year. Where do you begin? What's the best one? How do you possibly weed your way through that? And what ends up happening is a lot of people just jump from site to site to site, coach to coach to coach, and they never really learn anything. And they fall victim to what I call the infinite learning loop, mm-hmm. where they're never actually grounding themselves in anything fundamentally sound. Instead, they're just latching on to the next Band-Aid over and over and over again. So in the next 6 months, we're actually building a complete comprehensive free site. Solve for YTV is going to change a little bit. Right now we have a three-tiered system where basically you get what you pay for. We're actually going to kind of streamline that a bit, and we're going to take some of that content out of the paid arena and leave the rest there. We're going to lower our price point. But the idea behind the free site will be that it will be comprehensive A to Z, and we're just going to launch courses. So, I have a computer programming background, and like, if you wanted to do it yourself, like teach yourself how to code, there are a few free sites that you can go to, and they'll just walk you through a step-by-step process. I think this is what the industry is missing. I think that right now everything's being taught the same way, and we're missing the kinesthetic learner. We're missing the read and write learner. And we're reliant upon people who mainly learn audibly, some of which learn visually. And that's how we're just basically demonstrating everything through slideshows and watching people play. I think we can hit all four nodes through this course. And basically my hopes are that we can grow a pretty large community by just offering massive value for nothing. And then those who want to further their training into something more intricate, something more advanced, will happily pay to get behind the paywall.
I love it. I think it's such a smart adaptive strategy. And I actually was wondering if you were going to wind up doing that in the next couple of years. So yeah. It's really interesting to hear that you are. I think it's going to be a great strategy. I think it's going to help grow the brand. It's going to help a lot of people. So kudos to you, man. That's awesome. And thanks. I guess we'll finish on this, Matt. Through this whole entrepreneurial journey of yours, right? The ups, the downs, just the ride. Like, what are some lessons that you've learned about yourself along the way?
Well, I think most of the lessons I learned are probably like negative feedback in some capacity. Just in the sense that like, if I have one area that I fail myself and those around me the most, it's that I'm willing to shoulder more than my fair share and not expect the same of others. So I think that like, I think our growth has probably been slowed in a big way because I'm constantly willing to add more and more and more to my plate until I finally like break. And I think that's probably the plight of a lot of founders or entrepreneurial types, because it's one of those things where it's like, if you want it done right, do it yourself. But eventually, like if you're trying to scale particularly, eventually you just reach a point where it's like, yeah, you could do this better than the next guy, but you don't have the time. And 80% of what you could get done by you having to invest zero time is worth twice as much than you doing it perfectly yourself. So I think that's probably been like the biggest lesson that I've learned throughout this all. The other would probably, which I kind of already knew about myself, is just my ability to maintain resiliency despite maybe feedback saying that I shouldn't. Every day a new site's cropping up and I think that they're all pretty good. Like we just keep, when we got in this market, it was not this competitive, mm-hmm. right? And it would be very easy to just say like, listen, the pie is getting smaller every day and our slice is becoming less and less. Let's just hang this all up. But I was just like really never in this to get rich. I want it to be kind of a breeding ground for something else. And if I happen to get rich, great. Like this is my sidewalk that I'm shoveling for an old lady.
I love it.
And I hope that at the end of the day, something really great comes from it. But I don't think it would be a failure if it just collapsed all tomorrow.
No doubt it will. It's already a huge win, Matt. And you know, it's amazing. I think what you just said has a lot to do with also your baseball background. Think about it. It's a game that you fail more than you do well and succeed. And maybe that's part of where the resiliency comes from. And of course, the other past you shared with us. So before we finish up this founder hour with you, Matt, if there's one thing you'd want aspiring entrepreneurs to know who are about to embark on their journey, what would it be?
That it's hard. That it's hard and that it's riddled with failure and that like your first idea is probably not going to be your big success. I think that like for the most part, people who have an entrepreneurial vision should be looking at it through a long lens. And anybody who has this like go-getter attitude. Like they want to get it done tomorrow or today, I guess. And they're pitching you on a $1 billion idea. And like, you know, all it has to do is get the ball rolling and they're discard them. Because like those people are incredibly toxic. They're leeches. They are people who are looking for low hanging fruit. They're always trying to find the next big best thing. And they're going to be absolutely unreliable to put in the work necessary to actually grow something into a sustainable business.
There you go. Well, look, Matt, I want to thank you for taking time to join us for Founder Hour on the Faded Spade podcast. I mean, I think that this interview like embodies what we're trying to do in terms of sharing this story. And Sean and I always say, like, through these interviews, if we're able to inspire or help give direction to one person, it's well worth the time. And no doubt that your time doing this will, man.
Thanks. I appreciate it. I like what you guys are doing here. I'm shocked that we didn't talk about the WWE.
Oh, we will. Don't worry. Don't worry. If you're sticking around for another segment, we'll get into it. Sure. All right. All right, guys. So that's going to wrap up Founder Hour with Matt Berkey. He's right. I should have told him to bring a Software Y belt so I could have broke this thing out and showed him what a real championship sure. belt looks like. But sure. we'll get into that in the next segment.
The Grind.
All right, gang. We're back on the Faded Spade podcast. You just heard a great interview with Matt Berkey about his entrepreneurial story. He's going to stick around with the Poker Boss and I, and we're going to get into a fun topic. It's a topic that's been talked about on social media. It's been highly debated, but we're going to take a unique spin on it. And this is poker entertainment and where poker entertainment can go in the future. So here's the game. The game is this. If each of us had a magic wand, right? And we can each take 5 minutes or so. Like, what would the future of poker entertainment look like to us? And that can be anything from, you know, the shows on TV or however we define it. So we'll start with you, Sean. If you had a magic wand, what would poker entertainment in the future, the next couple of years, look like to you?
So obviously, you know, you guys know I talk a lot about making poker fun again, and obviously keeping it interactive for a viewing audience and growing this. You know, we kind of touch on the topic of making poker more of a sport. That's a whole nother conversation whether poker can be considered a sport. But I think making it super interactive for people at home, especially with like the bigger buy-ins or even like guys like Berkey that play on like big TV shows and stuff like that for large money, I think a really cool idea would be if somehow people could like in-game bet like the players they like and stuff like that. I've heard of some ideas of people doing this where they can actually like back people online poker and then like people set up cameras behind them and you can watch it in real time, you know, whatever the delay is, 10, 15 minutes. So their whole cards aren't exposed. But that was like a really cool idea to me that I heard like 18 months ago and it fell apart. So I'm like, let's do something like that. Like, cause I would buy into that. Just to, you know, I think that's the next level of poker entertainment is getting this whole Twitch community or whatever it is, like just streaming poker and making it interactive. You know, we're 20 years past the point of hole cards. What's the next step of entertainment? And I think in-game betting of some sort for poker players or just staking people in real time is kind of like cool. Cause a lot of people love staking, obviously. And, but what do? You throw $100 at someone and then they go to an event and then you don't know anything unless there's like super live updates or, you know, after the results are posted. But what can we do in real time? Everything we do today is in real time. So that's the next step. And I'd love to see what we can do with that.
I love it. So really you're talking about how do you engage the audience through interactivity, through maybe social media platforms or other ways while the game is actually happening and putting out challenges there or letting people bet on a certain hand or even doing polls and et cetera or something during it. Like we see in a lot of these other big entertainment like show attraction type television episodes.
Yeah, exactly.
Interesting. I hadn't thought about that. So, all right, cool, Sean. So, Berkey, I know you're very passionate about the subject as I am. So, magic wand, man. What's the future of poker entertainment look like for you?
Okay, so unfortunately, because I have a passion for cash, I actually think that future poker entertainment needs to grow through the tournament realm. Mm-hmm. And the reason being is because in tournaments, you're not dealing with chip EV, right? So the chips you're playing with aren't worth anything. And you're actually vying for a prize pool. And that's much more easily correlated to other industries that we've already seen pull off these models. So in my perfect world, we would see something akin to the PGA merging with esports. So effectively, like, what you should see is no players actually have to put up buy-ins anymore, right? They're just sponsored. And I talked about this on our podcast, where I think it would be, I think it's insane that, like, we haven't organized yet, but I guess it's just difficult to organize. But to be able to segregate events rather than by gender or by age or by these other things, these silly metrics that we're using, let's do something that benefits the ecosystem. Let's actually create a pro card, right? So everybody complained about the World Series this summer having too low of buy-ins, et cetera, and it's tarnishing the brand, yada, yada, yada. It's like, well, fact of the matter is all of us as professionals are benefiting tremendously by these players getting to come out and play small buy-ins. But okay, let's say you don't want that to be the case. However, we still recognize that for the 80% of recreational players, these small buy-ins are really lucrative and important to the growth of the low end of the ecosystem. Let's create a pro card. You just can't play, right? Hmm. You can't play these breeder ground games once you've earned X amount of dollars from playing poker professionally or whatever the case may be. And ultimately, what would come of that would then be circuits, right? There would be tiers where you would have the amateur circuit and then the entry level and the intermediates. And you should be able to traverse through all of them, right? Like, just because you've achieved expert doesn't mean that you're forced to play there. But again, like, you're getting free rolled in all these situations. So it does create a dynamic where the best are playing against the best. And coupling with Sean's idea, which I think ultimately the success of anything revolves around fantasy sports. So being able to create anything where players viewers at home are invested is massive. Imagine being able to set, we have the high roller circuit and they're all free rolled, right? Because effectively that's what's happening in a large way anyway. And I'm not trying to undermine them. I don't want to be taken the wrong way. I know a lot of them are firing hard on these.
I get it.
Right. But like, firing hard means you're putting up 20% of $1 million buy-in, you know, right, which I'm sure Bryn actually might have been psycho and did way more than that. But I digress. My point is, you see the best of the best. They're competing against one another. Their only skin in the game is to achieve something because they don't get paid otherwise. And now all of a sudden I get to set my DraftKings lineup of what I think the final table is going to be, what order I think that they're going to finish, and basically, like, we start to be able to develop this into a much more almost traditional sports market, or at least a more traditional sports betting market, where now all of a sudden there's billions of dollars coming in from people who are just casual fans.
I love it. I love it. And I'll capitalize on this. So here's where your WWE comes in, Matt. Like, you called me out on it. I really believe, and I'm going to do two different organizations, we need a mix of WWE and NASCAR. Here's what I mean. For poker to be truly entertainment, we need storyline in some way, and it can be based loosely off reality or just completely storyline written driven of the players competing against each other or in a tournament that the audience can buy into. Character development. We've got to have that. That's got to be a big component of it. The poker can be real. The poker should be 100% real, but the character development and the storyline that goes into it can be scripted. There can be some type of entertainment around it, right? And maybe there's insiders, just like there is in wrestling, where like that 1-3% kind of know the kayfabe type stuff. But in order to appeal to that mass audience, the person that's going to turn on a network show and just watch it, like, I really believe there's got to be that element of WWE. Mix that with what you're talking about in terms of the different levels of hierarchy. That's a pretty cool concept, right? You know, like the majors, the minors, the et cetera, amateur, whatever. Now take it a step further and think about NASCAR, and this aligns with what you're talking about. There is no reason, it's difficult, but there is no reason why each player involved can't be fully sponsored, their buy-in fully sponsored by a major sponsor. And the catch is, they're backing their horse, right? It's like kind of like this NASCAR car is sponsored by X or Y, but they're skin in the game. They might be putting up that 10K, that 15K, that 25K, that 100K to sponsor that player. And they're getting branding now through some type of entertainment show that has high viewability because of the storyline. And there's a chance for them to get their money back. Because if their player wins or cashes, maybe it's a 50-50 no makeup sponsorship clause, 80-20, who knows? But there's no reason that can't exist, right? So I really believe that you got to have like a WWE storyline aspect of it. The poker's got to be real. And then Sean, when you talk about interactivity, Lord knows, like, there are so many types of opportunities when it comes to that, that we're not even thinking of. So it's like, that's what poker entertainment is to me. Character development, the players become the characters people really care about. The poker is real. And then you mix in like game show type stuff, right? Who says each player can't have like a training person aligned to them? And if they get stuck in a real hand, everybody gets one button. You can FaceTime your trainer, FaceTime a friend, and talk through the hand. I know logistically that's a pain in the ass, but it's building that type of game show type stuff into the shows that also make it interactive. I'm passionate about this because I believe it has to happen. So here's my question. Like, Sean, your take on it, Matt, your take on it, my take on it. Like, do you think we can actually get there, and how?
Well, you know, this sounds like we were talking about $1 billion ideas earlier.
Right. But that's why it's like, how do we get there?
It's probably a $1 billion idea that we're about to shelve in a second. But no,
I'm not going to let him.
You know, and it's funny, a lot of these ideas that we're talking about right now, everybody's tried a small portion of it. No one has really come together to bring this into fruition as like this grand idea that we have. And it's honestly not something that is such a large idea. Are there roadblocks? Sure. Sure. There's a couple different roadblocks here. Just speaking from, you know, an ops and a gaming background, there are some of these parts of these ideas that are going to need to be vetted by the organizations, by gaming control boards in certain states and stuff like that. But I agree. I think, I don't know, like Matt, like you talked earlier, you said the hardest part is starting. And I honestly don't know where the starting point is here, but I'm excited to get on board with it. And, you know, from an operator's end, do my part to make sure that this is successful. And I know there would be people, like you said, Matt, earlier, there are a lot of people that just like back people and kind of just either for the sweat or they're just burning money or whatever they're doing. So maybe we get those people together and form some type of, you know, like a corporation where they're investing their money better here. We give them something to not only have like a little bit of a sweat, but have skin in the game and say, hey, you know, this is something that can be real. And maybe there's a true return on investment, not just I'm going to take 50% of the guy in the main. And if he binks for 8 million, I'm going to win 4 million. But there's a deeper ROI for these people and there's bigger business opportunities.
Yeah. I think the biggest problem is that it's a chicken egg dilemma. It massively requires organization. And in order to organize, it requires money. And so it's like, you can't raise the money without the organization. You can't really organize without the incentive of the money. And that all becomes incredibly problematic. And I think that, I think Kerry is trying to head this at Poker Central, but I think he's also realizing like just incredibly how difficult it is because as wealthy as he is, he's still only one man and he's only one man's checkbook. And it just becomes very difficult to launch the effective XFL of poker. So I guess like I personally find a struggle in getting over those two very specific hurdles, because ultimately what we're talking about is finding a path in some capacity where at one circuit level or as many as we possibly can facilitate, no player has to put up any money. That's ultimately what it comes down to, is cultivating talent for free cultivating talent for a large cost from the operator standpoint and for free from the actual talent standpoint. And esports does a great job of this because they get to move games, right? Mm-hmm. They just run the freemium product where it's like, download this game. There's a million in-app purchases. And if you're one of the most talented 1% out there, we're going to have a $6 million prize pool for you in the middle of New York City to play on the grandest stage of all. It's like, well, you know, they're coming from major operators who have billions of dollars and are making money hand over fist to actually just move the product. We don't have a product. And that becomes really problematic. So I don't know how the MLB, NBA, and NFL came to be, but that's the actual starting point that we're at, is the unionization of the talent, as well as like finding a collection of owners who are willing to build the infrastructure and make this what we envision it to be.
Well said, man. I mean, I couldn't have said it any better. That's so well said. That's exactly what needs to happen. So if,
well, there's one missing piece that is critical to this, and that's publicity. Right. There's just no outlet right now. Like TV doesn't want this product.
Right. And I think you're right. Like of all the organizations, I see what Poker Go is doing and they're getting there or trying to be that. Right. And WPT, like if you ever gone to any of their live events and then see how it's displayed on Fox Sports, they're starting down and starting the evolution. But to do what we do, I think you're right, Matt. I think it takes like this galvanizing leader, right? Sean, a corporation, an entity, right? A group of investors. It takes the players who are involved to be willing to sacrifice time. Like
maybe EV. Short-term EV.
Absolutely. Short-term EV and money. It takes a production company, independent or not, to like want to actually help put like the first pilot episode together. It takes writers to write potential storylines. It takes all these different people really sacrificing time, money, you know, et cetera, to see if this type of vision would actually come to life. And then take someone to sell it.
Right.
It takes someone to promote it. So you're right. Like I have never heard a more eloquently put statement than what you put, Matt, in terms of how did Major League Baseball, NFL, et cetera, unionize and make this happen? Because you're right. Those are the steps we need to take.
Yeah. And I mean, they have a big leg up because it's an aesthetically pleasing product. Yeah. You know, you could say baseball's boring to watch, but it's still a sport. There's still action. There's still movement. There's still pleasing things to see on the TV screen. Poker's not, yeah. Right? It's very stagnant in nature. It's a mental sport. And that's why baseball is accused of being boring, is because it is as much a cerebral sport as it is a physical one. But, you know, as you go down the deterioration of cerebral sports into just sheer action like hockey and football, you see that it converts very well to television.
100%. So, you know, I think there's going to be a lot more on this topic over the next, you know, couple of years, but you know, based on you being here, Matt, I thought it was a topic we should talk about. I think it's fun to know what that, you know, future vision would be for each of us. And I would say to those listening or watching, like, let us know what you think about it. Like hit up Sean. Sean, what's your poker handle or Twitter handle?
At the Poker Boss.
Poker Boss Matt.
At Berkey 11.
And I'm at @TomWheaton_. Hit up at Faded Spade Cards and get in the conversation, because the more we talk about this kind of thing and the more people that have eyeballs on it, you never know who's going to see it and be able to be like that person that can say, we can help make this happen. And hey, you know what? After this, maybe there's ways the three of us in our own little ways can try and make something like this happen. So I'm all for it if you guys are. You know, Matt, you could be the stone cold of the blue poker entertainment era, right?
And, sure. Yeah.
So anyway, all right. Well, I want to thank you guys for joining this topic. And that is a wrap of the latest Faded Spade podcast. I want to thank our guest, Matt Berkey, for joining us with the Founder Hour interview, talking all about his entrepreneurial journey and some of the background of Solve for Why. What a smart guy, huh, Sean? I mean, from a business standpoint, from a just a human standpoint,
just this guy
intelligent.
Blew my mind. Yes. And if I have two takeaways from Matt Berkey, it's one, why is never solved? Keep learning, kids. It's never solved. The why is never solved. Just keep on learning. And two, this guy is from legit the Footloose town. He talked about the steel mill and like crosswalk. I was like, this is awesome. Like instead of dancing like Kevin Bacon, though, he went into poker and being an entrepreneur. So I big ups to him, like what he's done with his company and his personal health and success, which is so, so important. I think I even tried to like have good posture while he was like talking and stuff like that. I was like, man, this guy, he's one of a kind for sure. And I'm real happy that I get to not only have him as a guest on our show, but also that I get to interact with him fairly regularly.
Well, Sean, you couldn't be more right, man. I mean, I learned a lot from Matt and I really enjoyed our poker entertainment discussion. And, you know, I think it's something we're all passionate about. There's no reason why we at least can't keep the discussion going. And As always, Sean, thanks for so much for being a part of this Faded Spade podcast. You bring so much personality and experience. It wouldn't be the same without you. So Tom Wheaton, Sean McCormick signing off the latest episode of the Faded Spade podcast.
The Faded Spade podcast is sponsored by Duck Duck Productions. Contact them for all of your podcast editing needs at randy@duckduckpro.com.
Upgrade to Faded Spade and get 15% off the new face of cards with code PODCAST at FadedSpade.com.